it's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to an hour of science fiction. Later on, we'll hear a story from X-1, but right now, it's Escape, from August 23, 1953, on CBS.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are the subject of an experiment. An experiment to make you the most powerful man on Earth. While if it succeeds, from that moment, you will be forever locked in a world from which there can be no escape.
So listen now as Escape brings you Irving Reese's extraordinary story, The Man from Tomorrow.
With a want ad in the daily paper. Wanted, ex-fighter pilot, must be in perfect health and prepared for rigid tests. Successful candidate will receive good pay and will be given opportunity to contribute to daring experiment and world betterment. Science Associates, 126 West Street. 126 West Street turned out to be one of those ultra-modern, super-scientific buildings. No windows, and air-conditioned as cool as a north wind off an iceberg. About 60 guys had answered the ad.
Hi, Major.
Hi, Randy.
Been a long time.
Yeah. Some of the faces were familiar, guys that had been in my fighter wing. We sat there, 60 of us, and waited. An hour. 2 hours. Nothing happened.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting out of here. This place gives me claustrophobia. Hey, it's locked. We're locked in here.
And even before this had a chance to sink in, another door opened on the far side of the room. A guy with a white mask on his face came in carrying a Thompson submachine gun.
Hey! Hey!
They all flattened on the floor except me. I made a dash for the man in the mask, but he disappeared as quickly as he'd come.
Hey, how come you didn't hit the floor? Didn't you tire of living?
He was shooting blanks, couldn't you see? Weren't any bullets chipping anything? That was a gag.
I don't like this. Come on, let's crash the door and get out of this rat trap.
Save it, Randy. It won't do any good. They can keep us bottled up till they're good and ready to let us go. And then something else. Thick, black, acrid smoke pouring out of the air conditioning vents. And a sound from somewhere, an airplane diving. Every pilot remembers with horror the smell of burning oil from a plane out of control. It hit us way back and deep down. Some of the guys got panicked. I pushed Randy down to the floor. You get more air down here. Now relax. Then the blowers reversed. And that smoke was sucked out quick. And a loudspeaker cut in from nowhere.
Attention, please.
Hey, quiet down, fellas. Quiet down. Take it easy.
For the past 2 hours, you have been under close observation as a necessary part of this test. You were warned in advance the test would be rigid. As you file out past the guard, you will receive a token compensation for your time and discomfort. We now ask you all to leave except the man who ran for the gunner. The door is now open. Thank you.
Looks like you got the job, Major.
Looks like I'm going to shove it right back in their faces, Randy.
Well, so long.
Yeah. So long, Randy. Take it easy.
Your name, please.
Well, I hardly expected to find a blonde at the bottom of this.
You will come with me, please.
Don't give me orders, Blondie. I just want to see the guy responsible for this. Then I'm getting out of here.
I take it you have lost interest in contributing to the world benefit.
That what it said in the ad? Well, whatever your lofty purpose, I don't like cold-blooded cruelty.
Unfortunately, personal feelings cannot enter into these steps toward our objectives.
Then your objectives are wrong.
You will be better able to judge that when you know what they are.
I don't think I'm interested. And if I may have a personal feeling, callousness is unattractive enough in a man.
Neither your feelings nor mine will matter in this project. Major, I understand that it was.
Mr. Kenman, the war is over. Miss...
Dr. Frost.
Poetic.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I sometimes mutter to myself.
If it is possible for you to unlock your quite superior intellect from emotional reactions common to schoolgirls and fishwives, my senior colleague, Professor Baird, and I will attempt to convince you on the only basis that it should appeal to a mature mind. Facts.
By all means, Dr. Frost. Professor Baird, where'd you get the notion of asking for fighter pilots?
Simple. Only one man in 10,000 was able to qualify mentally and physical for fighter training. Additional eliminations due to flunkouts, mortality in training and combat brings the total to one in 20,000. The standards we applied during the 2 hours in which we observed your every action and reaction raises the mathematical incidence of your sensory acuity to approximately one in 100,000.
I'm flattered.
You'll have greater reason to be if our experiment proves successful. You will be the only man on Earth possessed of your powers. You will be the man from tomorrow.
How do you propose to go about that?
We will first show you how we've trained other individuals. Dr. Frost, will you proceed with the demonstration?
Come in, Mr. Logan. Mr. Logan, have you ever been in this part of the laboratories before?
No.
Would you describe it, please?
It is a rectangular room, 40 by 20. The ceiling is 18 and a half feet high. There's a desk 12 feet from me, slightly to my right. There are two people seated at it. One has just risen.
That will be all. Thank you, Mr. Logan.
Well, Mr. Kenman?
Well, it'd be very impressive if any schoolboy with normal vision couldn't do as well.
Agreed. Mr. Logan is totally blind.
Looking back now, I can hardly believe my own impressions. The blind man was followed by a deaf mute, then by a paraplegic who'd lost all sense of touch and smell. Demonstrations were incredible.
Not one of these persons possessed physical senses above the average. The deprivation of one sense or another, in the case of the blind or the deaf man, stimulated nature's desire to compensate for the loss.
But what are you trying to prove?
That man has powers even now that are beyond his comprehension. We wish to explore those powers. Suppose one nearly perfect man, with superior sensory perception to begin with, could develop the extension of his five senses to the maximum degree we've just observed. What do you think would happen?
I don't know.
Neither do we. But it is our conviction that this man would also acquire a new sense, a sixth sense, that would endow him with a power never dreamed of before. Don't you think it's a dimension worth exploring?
Maybe. How could anybody accomplish that?
By training. By producing the circumstances that surround the blind man, the deaf man, and the handicapped. You would have to agree to cut yourself off from the outside world for 3 years. You would spend 6 months living in a pitch-dark laboratory. You would sleep, eat, function in a world of darkness.
We will use various sound devices to train and measure your hearing responses. After that, 6 months will be devoted to simulating the world of the deaf-mute, and so on.
You will be paid $20,000 at the end of the 3 years. All the necessities of living will be provided during that time. Then a test will be made, and if our predictions are realized, you will be signed for an additional 5 years at $20,000 per year. Dr. Frost will be in charge of the training program. Do you wish to undertake it?
Well, that's a pretty serious move. I'd like to think about it.
You have all the facts clearly, Mr. Kenman. We would like a decision now.
You think feeling might enter into my considerations, Doctor? That what you're afraid of?
Afraid? Fear is merely an emotion, Mr. Kenman. I have learned to control all my emotions.
I wonder.
I beg your pardon?
I was muttering again. What I meant to say is I agree to undertake your experiment.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, forest fires, 9 out of every 10, are made by man. So redouble your efforts to eliminate forest fires. Crush out every cigarette. Break matches in two and grind them with your fingers. Douse down campfires and turn them over until no ember remains. Save a fortune in property and save human lives. And now, back to Escape.
Given 2 days to settle my affairs, such as they were. It meant saying goodbye to my landlady and packing a bag. And then I reported back to Scientific Associates. To Dr. Frost of the beautiful face and figure, all ice. And Professor Baird, tall, quiet, and clinical. I was led into a pitch dark room, blacker than the blackest night. That was to be my home for 6 months. It had a bed, bathroom, closets. All I had to do was find them. I won't waste time telling you what that was like. Just close your eyes tight and try to find your way around a room that's familiar to you. You'll get the idea. I was still stumbling around 3 weeks later when I reported for my daily training with Dr. Frost in the adjoining laboratory, which was even blacker if possible.
No!
Are you hurt?
No. You wouldn't care if I broke my leg.
There is a chair nearby.
I know. I just fell over it. No.
We can begin as soon as you're settled.
Yeah. Lucky it's so dark. I'd have to apologize for wearing my pajamas.
Don't you like dressing?
Oh, I love it. When I can find my pants.
Today's exercise will be recognition of pure tones. Here is an example. That is 1,000 cycles, or 1,000 vibrations per second, stripped of all harmonics. What would you say that was?
Oh, 1,100.
It is 1,500 cycles. Now, please tell me when you begin to hear the next tone and what the frequency is.
I couldn't make the slightest dent in that glacial reserve. Tried to match her at her own game for a while, but she loved it, and I'm human. Anyway, at the end of the 6 months, I could ramble through the whole place and never stub my toe. It was amazing how you learn to sense things in the dark and what your ears could do. 800. Oh, 4,000. Out.
Good. Excellent. Mr. Kenman, your threshold of hearing is 20 decibels greater than the average ear. That's very good.
Well, Dr. Frost, I can't see you, but do I detect a note of enthusiasm in your voice?
satisfaction, perhaps, Mr. Kenman. The experiment so far...
Dr. Frost, have you ever let yourself go?
Mr. Kenman, I'm not nearly so naive as you assume. Nor have any of your innuendos or mumblings for the past 6 months escaped me. I told you in the beginning that neither your feelings nor mine would have any bearing on
this. You haven't answered my question.
I am fully aware of the nature of biological stresses.
In a scientific way, of course.
What distinguishes man from the animal is his understanding of these stresses, but mostly his control.
Control is a traffic cop with a stop sign, Doctor, but eventually the traffic has to go somewhere.
I can understand the frustration of your masculine ego, especially in this enforced loneliness of the experiment.
Thank you.
But we have only begun. We have 2 years. We have 2 years.
Strange, my hearing is so... Strange, my hearing is so... Then there was light again, but no hearing. They devised some newfangled earplugs, and I began 6 months of silence. 6 months of being deaf as a doorknob. Deaf, but not quite deaf, because I began to see sounds, to feel sounds, like waves against my skin. I began to hear with my body, with my pores. Have you ever touched a sound? Ever seen thunder? You get so you can look at sound, almost see the waves they make. Trembling in the air. And have you ever tried silence? Try. Not saying a word, not a syllable for an hour or a day. I tried it for 6 months. Until all the unsaid words piled up inside my head clung like unborn sounds at the back of my throat. Whoever said silence is golden never felt the lump of lead that accumulates inside you. Silence. Then the 6 months ended, and I felt the vibrations of her footsteps down the long hall. And I saw the door opening. A split second before you would normally see it open, for my eyes were my ears, and they were a jump ahead of what they'd ever been before. I saw her lips move, and I could read every word.
In a moment, you will hear again. In just a moment.
Then she removed the fancy earplugs, and the little canyon I'd been living in widened to a continent. And then her moving lips became sounds.
Can you hear now? Can you hear me? Nod to me or raise your finger when you can hear the sound of my voice.
Oh, I heard you. 5 minutes ago.
Were the plugs defective?
No, I read your lips. Incidentally, I take it it's okay for me to talk now.
Of course.
Have I been a good boy? Have I done everything you wanted?
So much so, Mr. Kenman, that we're giving you a few days' rest before we begin your training for taste and touch.
Can I do anything I want?
Anything. Within reason.
I'd like to have a drink. Strangely enough, I'd like to have you join me.
Perhaps that can be arranged.
By the way, do you have a first name, or are you only a title followed by Frost, huh? Followed by a long string of degrees.
Oh, my first name is Jessica.
Jessica? Oh, that's more like it. Jessica. Jessica. After all that silence, it's good just to say a woman's name.
Well, until the experiment is completely over, Mr. Kenman, it had better remain Dr. Frost.
Okay. Dr. Jessica Frost, plus degrees. But when I get to take you out for a drink as a normal human being and not as a guinea pig, let's just go to a cocktail bar where they don't cheat.
Cheat?
No. You ask for a particular brand, this bartender pours out a few drops of it and then fills the rest of the jigger with some of that cheap stuff behind the bar.
How do you know?
Oh, I've been trained in these little subtleties of life by a master mind. For one thing, I can spot the different gurgling sounds of the bottles. And then, too, I seem to have an uncanny knack these days of seeing around corners.
Good, good.
Well, despite the watered-down booze, I give you a toast. To you.
You've been very cooperative about this. Mr. Kenman, I want you to know that I like you very much.
Well, now I'm sure the experiment is a success because I've developed a sixth sense. I distinctly heard a lovely lady saying, I like you very much, and that couldn't possibly have been you. I rather enjoyed the touch tests. It was one area I'd never realized held such hidden powers. After a few months, my fingertips knew the difference between crystal and diamonds. I could tell if you had a suntan merely by touching your cheek. And as for the taste test, food suddenly became a symphony concert. Sourness had many degrees. Sweetness had a range as wide as the spectrum of a rainbow. And then all of my highly developed senses brought on a new perception, something over and beyond, something added to the rest, more than a summation of all the senses. Did you ever swerve the steering wheel of your car suddenly without knowing why, and then you realized the move saved your life? Or one day you thought of an old friend whom you hadn't seen or communicated with in years, and then you found a letter from him in the box that morning? Coincidence? Black magic? I once thought so. I didn't anymore. I had a knowledge beyond knowledge.
Sit down, Mr. Kenman.
Thank you.
Your period of training has been completed. We've taken the final test, and we've decided to retain you. Will you execute the contract, please, Mr. Kenman? It's the arrangement as decided. $20,000 a year for the next 5 years. Is anything wrong, Mr. Kenman?
No, nothing wrong. Not now.
Mr. Kenman, what are you doing?
Obviously, I'm not signing it.
Why?
Because I'm afraid.
What is there to be afraid of?
Of myself, Professor. Of what I know now, what I'm going to know in the future. Of what you and Dr. Frost may ask me to do.
Afraid to make contribution to scientific progress? Undreamed of progress?
Professor, remember the sixth sense you gave me. Do you know what I can see? I can see beyond the test tubes and the telescopes, all your theories and experiments. And I don't see one important thing. I don't see happiness. Only fear and falling buildings. That's all I see coming out of my super sense.
I suppose then that you think that all my work, our work, is to go to death and destruction?
It might.
That's not fair.
Isn't it? What happens if I sign the contract? Who makes the decisions?
These are things I can't honestly answer.
I know. That's what I mean. It might be out of your hands then. Governments would pay billions for me. Our own country would guard me like Fort Knox. I would be the most valuable thing in the world. Alive, even more valuable for some people dead. But a thing, not a man. That's not going to be for me. Not that way.
All this work, everything we've done doesn't mean anything, then. It's all for nothing.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I guess you picked the wrong man for the job.
What are you going to do now?
Pack my things, go away. I don't know where, it doesn't really matter. Jessica, I probably won't see you again before I go. Thanks for everything. And I'm sorry you feel that I've let you down. So long.
That is that.
I was just going to...
Try to talk me out of it.
No. Yes, I was, but not anymore.
Oh. I'm very glad you changed your mind.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Not yet. It's kind of funny. Going out of here almost the way I came. One suitcase, hat and coat. Only difference, I've got all the knowledge of the world up here. I don't know what I'll do with it. I haven't been able to think. Not clearly. I know one thing, though. There are a lot of things I can try.
What?
Cancer, heart disease, a dozen other things.
Yes.
Might not be bad for a start.
Oh, that's not bad for a start. Do you think you might need someone to help?
Yes. Yes, I think I might.
I've talked to Professor Baird. I think perhaps he understands.
Ah, does he?
Yes. It's a little uncomfortable for a woman. I'm not supposed to say anything until you do. You already know what I'm thinking, don't you?
Let's be old-fashioned. I love you. Will you come with me?
Yes. I love you, too.
I know. Now, come on, let's go.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Man from Tomorrow by Irving Reese, starring Lawrence Dobkin as Dix. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, Edgar Berrier, Kurt Martell, Jack Carroll, and Barney Phillips. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week, we present a story of two boys and the dreadful game which they played. You might have read about it in your newspaper. It might have happened in your town. And if it did, it must never happen again. So listen next week when Escape will bring you Anthony Ellis's terrifying play, The Game. Would you be interested in the Alsop family, how it diminished and grew? We suspect you would be, for it's tomorrow night's Crime Classics drama on CBS Radio. Don't miss Crime Classics on most of these same stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, Bill Cullen's Walk a Mile show is heard every Monday evening on the CBS Radio Network.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 23, 1953, on CBS. The story would be used again on the Suspense series in September of 1957.
And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Those who know about such things tell us that an engine delivers little more than 50% of the energy potential of its fuel. The rest is dissipated in waste. Waste motion, waste energy, gases, ash. The same can be said of man. Has been said, in fact. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. If an average man were trained to use his faculties to the utmost, he could be a superman. If a superior man were so trained, what could he not accomplish? The answer is implied in the upcoming story. Listen. Listen, then, as Mr. and Mrs. Frank Lovejoy star in Man from Tomorrow, the last radio play written by the late Irving Reese.
You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, X-1 from June 27th, 1957 on NBC. It's Arthur Selling's story, The Category Inventor.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents...
X minus one.
Nelson Olmsted stars in The Category Inventor.
Frankly, I didn't expect to have the trouble. The morning that it happened was just like any other morning. I came into the locker room and took off my coat, and through the open doors I could hear the welcome sound of the boys warming up. Perhaps I should have realized something was wrong when Kurt Bergson, the orchestra manager, came up to me.
Gilbert. How are you this morning?
Fine, Mr. Bergson. I'm not late, am I?
No, not late. You must have left the house early this morning.
Yes, I did. It was such a nice day, I thought I'd walk. Luckily, I don't play the double bass. Bassoon isn't so hard to carry.
You didn't get your mail this morning?
No, I didn't. The mail usually comes about 10 o'clock. Well, I better get out there and warm up.
Gilbert, I wish you had gotten your mail this morning. You see, I have to let you go.
What? But what do you mean? Why? What's the matter?
Well, you understand.
But there's a concert tonight and tomorrow night. Who can you get to replace me? Where can you get a bassoonist? Where? Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Gilbert. It had to happen.
Oh, no. Not the bassoon. The timpani I can understand and the piano, but not the bassoon. I'm going out there.
Don't, Gilbert. Don't. You'll just be unhappy.
Now, let me by, Mr. Bergson. I've got to see it with my own eyes. Of course, it was bound to happen. Where my music stand and chair had been, stood a gleaming coppery robot. His music stand was attached to a bracket that came out from his forehead, and his electronic scanning eyes were blinking and ready. He had 7 fingers on each fully articulated hand. His lips were pre-cast in perfect bassoonist embouchure, with flexi-plasti-butyl skin adjusting to the reed. I could hear the softly whirring motor of his constant pressure breath apparatus. It had come. The robot bassoonist.
Now, Gilbert, honey, you mustn't be depressed. It's not your fault. The world doesn't understand creative artists anymore.
No, bassoon player isn't creative, Marge. He executes.
Well, anyway, he's an artist. That means he's got intelligence and imagination. And that means he's got a head start when it comes to a new job, doesn't it, honey?
Sure. Yeah, head start. Marge, I tell you, there isn't any use. I've been checking into the category office every day. All I know is how to play the bassoon. Well, we'll just have to get used to being on reserve.
What will we tell the children, dear?
And then, of course, one day, the household robot broke down in the middle of breakfast.
Gilbert!
What is it? What?
The robot right in the middle of getting breakfast, it exploded.
And we're hollering, sitter.
Oh, but the children will be late to school. Call in, Michael.
Well, there's not much use in their hurrying if there's no breakfast, is there?
Well, I'm trying. You think it's easy making breakfast by hand?
No.
Don't just stand there. Do something. The children won't get any breakfast, and they've got enough to put up with.
But what do you mean by that? What exactly have they got to put up
with? Look, I haven't got time to argue with you. Which one of these tubes is the orange juice concentrate?
I think that's ketchup.
Well, turn it off.
Oh, you jammed it.
Oh, it's been like this ever since you stopped...
Ever since I what?
Oh, keep your hand over the ketchup. It's flooding the kitchen.
Ever since what? Ever since they put me on reserve. That's what it is, isn't it? Listen, if you think... Confounded robot, always in the way.
If you're going to use foul language, you might at least keep your voice down. You know what sharp ears the children have.
Oh, so now I'm a corrupter of my own children. Well, let me tell you... What's that?
The hen, Matt. I said it to synthesize fresh eggs. It's out of control. Oh, Gilbert, there goes the ketchup again. Do something.
You are listening to The Category Inventor on X-1.
What can you do with a penny? Not much? Don't you believe it. Because for one penny a year, you, as an American taxpayer, are helping to support the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. The aim of the Food and Agriculture Organization is to provide increased supplies of food and other agricultural products at prices which the people can afford, and to raise the standard of living of rural people everywhere. You are part of the great and lasting work being done by this United Nations agency. And it costs you only one penny a year.
Now back to X-1 and the Category Inventor.
Finally, I got the ketchup and orange juice faucets turned off and the Hen-O-Mat pulled out of the socket. I looked down, and there was our household robot on the floor. It was all its fault, it and millions of its kind. Suddenly, all the frustration of the last few months focused on the robot, and I kicked it.
Well, now I've seen everything. A grown man actually kicking a poor, defenseless robot.
I was expecting the mechanic from Robot Center when the door buzzed. I opened it. But it wasn't the mechanic. It was my father-in-law.
Hello, son. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, hello. I wasn't expecting you. George is a politician. They haven't yet found a robot that can take that trade over. Right behind him was the mechanic from Robot Service. However, he wasn't the mechanic, he explained.
Actually, you see, I'm a robot therapist.
Huh?
Specializing in robot psychiatry and robot synaptic stimulation.
Well, what do you mean, therapist? I sent for a mechanic.
Now, you just leave it to me, sir. Where is the robot?
In the closet. I dumped it there after it broke down.
Oh, too bad, too bad. It would have been better if you'd left it where it fell. Failure attitudes often give invaluable pointers to the cause of breakdown. In here?
Yeah, that's right. In the kitchen closet. How do you like that? They got psychiatrists for robots.
Well, certainly, son, that's the way things are now. They're branching out, keeping one step ahead of the robots all the time. Man's got to be adaptable. Now, you take old Tom Angel. Old Tom up and registers himself as the first of a new generation of reading card verse writers. He was first in, so he got charter rights. Now, you got the idea? Once you get in the progressive mood, you're all set.
Yeah, funny kind of progress, busting off a defunct custom.
Yeah, well, nowadays a man doesn't have to fight for a job. All he has to do is to invent one. That's one of the platforms of our party, the party that stands up for the reservist rights. Why, you know, it was our party who saw to it that every family worker and reservist alike had a robot of his own by inalienable rights.
No, I'm sick and tired of having a robot of my own. I'd be perfectly happy if there weren't any robots at all, especially the ones that sit in their chromium-plated tails and chromium-plated orchestras playing chromium-plated bassoons.
What? Well, Gilbert, you don't know what you're saying. You're talking like a Luddite.
Oh, I am, I? What's a Luddite?
It's history. They were the people who broke up the first power machines 200 years ago. Well, if that's the way you
feel... Hold it now. Wait a minute. Hold it.
Well, what is it? What's the matter now?
Pop, I've got it. Excuse me, I'm on my way.
Mr. Perry, I just gave your robot a tape audio in there, and the results were sad.
Yeah, but look.
Sad.
Yeah, look, I'm busy. I'll talk to you later.
That robot has developed a severe guilt complex.
Guilt complex?
That's right. Oh, they're sensitive, you know. Once they get the idea their owners aren't happy, they brood about it. They make mistakes, and that makes them feel more guilty. You just have to keep these robots understanding that you're happy.
Well, finally, I got away from the robot psychiatrist. The category office was crowded with reservists hanging around with the slender hope of getting in a hot tip.
I went into the first booth and spoke to the robot clerk.
Yes, sir. You wish to file a category. I have your name and other information now. Nature of category.
Neo-Luddite.
Repeat, please.
Neo-Luddite.
Definition?
The lawful opposition to the robot economy. Now, let's see a robot take over that job.
Classification of category.
Political.
Your application will take a short time to check. This machine sends a copy to the registry below. They carry a complete file of all categories.
Oh, is that it?
I'm sorry, sir, but your application has been rejected.
What?
The category office extends its sincere regrets and trusts this will not deter you from making further application at the category office.
Now you listen here, you metallic mouthpiece. That application is legitimate. Now, nobody's got any right to reject it. Now, you can't just stand here...
Please, sir, you are overexcited. The supervisor is on his way.
Ah, Mr. Perry, you're upset, eh? Well, you understand we dislike having to turn down anyone's application.
Now, listen. Now, that category I put forward is perfectly good. Now, I've got a right to be heard. An opposition party is just what's needed.
Well, of course it is, Mr. Perry. I was only trying to tell you that you couldn't register that category because it was registered years ago.
What?
Yes, the Humans Only movement is a recognized party, even though it's never managed to win an election or attract many adherents. But the movement does have state backing, funds, officers, the same proportion of salary to officials, members, the same as the two big parties. Better luck next time, Mr. Perry.
There was only one thing to do. Start all over again, some of the lines. Study and study until I could do it as well as I could play the bassoon. But what line? And how could I be sure that it wouldn't be taken over by the robots? I was walking along the street, and then suddenly a soundy ad jumped up out of a hydrant at me, and I popped it and listened.
Are you on reserve? Are you tired of being unemployed? Don't fret. Contact the C.P. Jones Bureau, Category Inventors, Room 53, Universe Building.
Just as I got to the Universe Building, the doors swung open and two big bruisers came through carrying a little old man.
You let me go, you hear? Let me go! I'll have a writ served on you. A man's got his rights. Now you let me go. Let me go.
Are you all right?
I'll have a writ served on him.
Are you hurt?
No. No.
Oh. Well, I wonder if you could help me. This is the Universe Building, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Would you mind dusting off my jacket?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for somebody here. I wonder if you could help me.
Robbers! Throwing a man out after all these years. 10 years I've worked in this building.
Oh, you work here. Well, then perhaps you could help me find...
Yes, I had my own office. The C.B. Jones Bureau.
You're C.P. Jones, the category inventor?
You heard of me?
I was coming to see if you could fix me up.
Oh. Well, it's just as well you didn't. I didn't have a category in stock. As a matter of fact, son, I never did manage to invent a single category. Except the one of category inventor. Well, they finally caught up with me. Revised my category a week ago and canceled my license. Say, would you like to have a drink?
I don't have any money, only reserve script.
Well, that's good enough for an emergency. Come on. You see, it didn't cost him anything. My fee was only payable out of salary if and when I delivered. Once a year, the accounting office sent over a robot auditor to check the books. Oh, I had two or three sets of books, but they finally caught up with me, and now I've got to invent another job. I used to be a trapeze artist in the circus. I was the oldest trapeze man in the game, but I got too shaky. Have another drink.
Yeah, well, it's my turn to buy.
All right, but say... After we finish this round, let's move to a real bar.
About the fourth bar, we got to playing a parlor game. Inventing make-believe categories, you know. And you go from the inane to the obscene and back again. And we got thrown out of one bar, and then we started on beer, and, well, that made us sad. And C.P. Jones began to recite poetry.
How am I to face the odds of man's bedevilment and God? I, a stranger and afraid,
in a world I never made.
Say, did I ever show you a one-handed nip up from the chandelier? I used to be an acrobat, you know. Alley-oop!
I woke up with the sun in my eyes, and I saw a figure moving. Is that you, Marge?
If you want breakfast, you'll have to go out. They haven't delivered the new robot yet. Do you want all this trash?
What trash?
These papers in your pockets and a note.
What does it say?
Oh, I'm not surprised you can't read this morning. I'm surprised you're breathing this morning.
No, please, Marge.
All right. It says, Umbrological Parallax Tracer. What's that?
Umbrological Parallax Tracer. Umbrological, That's it.
What's it?
That's it. Give me my pants. I've got something to attend to.
Well, I'm glad to see you, Mr. Perry. Trying again, eh? Category, Umbrological Parallax Tracer. Well, most interesting. What exactly is
it? Well, it involves ascertaining the degrees of parallax for the current umbrological investigation. It's not easy to explain in a few words.
Oh, of course. I thought it would probably be too complex for me to grasp. I'll check it through. Frankly, I don't understand half the details of the categories that we... Let's see now. Oh, dear.
What's the matter?
The West Town office has already admitted an application this morning for an umbrological parallax correlator.
Uh-huh.
Now, you'll have to prove that the two functions are distinct and separate.
Umbrological parallax That wouldn't have been a Mr. C.P. Jones, would it?
Why, yes. You know each other?
Well, yes. We should have met this morning and filed our categories together. But a parallax tracer is entirely different from a parallax correlator. You see, a parallax can be correlated in a dialectical opposition in a conjunction to and with it being traced. Now, to put it more simply...
Well, that's perfectly all right. I'll see that the distinction is made. Well, your charter will be mailed to you within a few days. I suppose you want to share offices with Mr. Jones?
Why, yes, sir. Yes, I suppose so.
Very well, then. I'll have the offices assigned. Congratulations, Mr. Perry. You're off reserve.
Well, how do you like the new office, Gilbert, my boy?
Oh, figure you almost cleared the pitch for me by filing.
Well, I didn't have your address, and I didn't know you'd get the same idea. I just remember we'd laughed a lot over it and thought it one of the best phony categories we'd made up. Of the printable ones,
yes.
That is. Anyway, I did change the end to give you a loophole.
Oh, of course we're cheating, aren't we?
Cheating? Well, I'm not. I've already looked up umbrology for a start.
There isn't any such word.
Well, if there was, it would be a science of shadows.
Oh.
Now, all we have to do is find the parallax.
But you're not serious.
Serious? Of course I'm serious. The world's so complicated these days, everyone's such a specialist that no one can be sure yet what's fact and what isn't. We're the only umbrologists in the world. Who can question us?
Yes, I suppose that's true.
Why, the scope's enormous.
Anyway, we're off reserve. We've got a job.
And I'm not letting any grass grow under my feet here. Now, don't just stand there. Our robot hasn't arrived yet. Give me a hand with this filing cabinet. We're going to need it.
You're right. We got our work cut out for us. Let me tell you, the life of an umbrological parallax tracer isn't all beer and skittles. Let's get to work.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. X-1 has brought you The Category Inventor, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Arthur Sellings and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Nelson Olmsted as Gilbert, Hetty Galen as Marge, Wendell Holmes as George, Joseph Bell as the serviceman, Alan Bergman as the supervisor, Bert Cowlin as Kurt, and Edwin Cooper as Mr. Jones. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
We pause now for station identification.
X-1, on Tuned 2 yesterday from June 27th, 1957 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.